I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. I hope you're doing well. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. And this episode, well, it's Buddy Peace. So you probably have heard Buddy's name mentioned loads. If you're not familiar with his music, then you would definitely have heard the name Buddy Peace get used a lot because Buddy produces Distraction pieces. Buddy produces Films to Be Buried With. He produces the Pod Bible podcast, and yeah, he's somebody that I've known a long time. He's DJed for me, and he's was in the Warren piece with our other friend Warren, and yeah, and he's just a really nice dude. And what he also does is he writes for Pod Bible. He reviews all the kind of tech stuff and talks about what you need if you want to record a podcast. So we killed two birds with one stone. We had a new piece of recording equipment and Buddy come up to where I work and I said, look, don't just come up and have a look at the stuff. Let's have a chat because we've been mates for a long time now and we've never really sat and sort of, I've never really asked about his journey and the songs that are soundtracked it. So that's what you're about to hear. Before that, I just want to say thanks to Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks ever so much to 76, my producer, for producing this. We will definitely get an episode with 76 in the bag at some point. And yeah, I think if you enjoy this and it's the first time that you've listened to Off the Beaten Track, please have a look in the back catalogue because there's 100-odd episodes of me chatting to loads of like great musicians, producers, artists, actors. So go and have a look in the back catalogue. And if you do enjoy this, please give us a like, love, share, retweet, and tell your pals. Best thing you can do is subscribe, actually. All right, well, look, let's get back to the job at hand, which is, well, all that's left for me to do now is just say, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Buddy Peace. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fairwear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk sosclothing.co.uk. Do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15. BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk. Official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. We are recording. We are at WeWork Building in East London. And joining me today, it's been a while since we've seen each other, but sitting opposite me is Buddy Peace.
Hi, Stu. Hello, listening audience also.
You all right?
Yeah, doing good. Actually, it's the fast track to friendship is intimacy. So I can tell you that today is the first day of the year I haven't been wearing my long johns or undershirt.
Okay.
So now we're instantly on a deeper level of friendship.
I feel I know you a lot better now.
Yeah, it's that intimacy.
So, I mean, I'm a fan of a long john. Yeah. I don't necessarily wear them that much anymore. Sometimes when I'm...
Oh, Stu, you must.
I'm working at the club, and if I'm standing outside all night, I will generally dig out a long john. I still go for the old school or white long john.
I like the way you do the podcast and you call it a long john and not long johns, because I don't know where that came from. Like, I feel like that's an American podcastism where people start saying, yeah, I'll eat a golden graham, I'll eat a cornflake, and it's like... Where it went from being a singular item to a plural to a singular item.
Is it a singular item, long john?
I call them long johns. I think the johns refer to the legs.
The legs, okay.
This is getting us on an interesting tangent. Because where does long johns come from?
I don't know.
Should we just go on this tangent?
We could do. I mean, I'd rather talk about music because, I've been wanting to talk about music with you for a long time because, for people that might not be aware of what Buddy does, so aside from all of the music that you've made over the years, which we will talk about as this podcast unfolds, you are also kind of chief producer for Distraction Pieces.
Yes, it's a weird... sort of version of producer, because basically Pip, Scroobius Pip, turns up to all the interviews with all the mics and the recorder, and he sets sets everything up and pushes play and does all that stuff. So I'm not like in there producing the show and saying like, "Oh, could you get closer on the mic?" and this kind of stuff. But he sends me all the interviews after it, and then I put it together and sort of make it sound as pretty as I can.
Yeah. You do films to be wary with.
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm. With Brett Goldstein. Similar deal. He records with lapel mics, which, for instance, in Nish Kumar's case, Nish will laugh. He's got an incredibly loud laugh.
It's very loud, isn't it?
It's not as loud for you, because when you hear it, I've levelled it. But when I hear it for the first time, it's just... And yeah. He's obviously leaning into his lapel mic and laughing full pelt. And so, yeah, I have a little trouble with that. He's a lovely guy, but his laugh is insane. Brett's as well.
It is quite strange, Brett's, because I've guested on there. And he has two separate recorders with, like, his lapel mics. And I was quite surprised at first. I was like, wow, Brett's very...
Actually, I haven't seen it. I've never been present for a recording. So what does he do? He's got the lapel mics.
Yep.
And then what's he got?
It's two little Zoom recorders.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just like... And then I take it he just sent you the two audio files.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so he's got other stuff as well?
No.
Oh,
no,
so he's just got them too. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you meant he had like loads of... like.
Unless he's upgraded friends. Since he's... podcast has become a real big deal.
He hasn't. He remains true to the...
I've been trying to get Brett to come on here, and he's worried that his music knowledge is going to get ridiculed, and because he claims not to know too much about it, and when I got round there, there was an electronic drum kit in his front room, an organ, and he spoke about his love of Billy Joel quite a lot. Okay, so I was like, look, come on, let's talk music. But I will make it happen, definitely.
Nah, he's he's very sort of shy and self-deprecating in some cases. Like, yeah. You wouldn't think it, but, like, he's very humble, and I can imagine him saying that. It's like, yeah, but, like, people think I don't know anything.
Of course.
Like, I know your podcast is all about ridiculing musical knowledge, so he's right in that sense. But, yeah, he's got nothing to worry about. I know every answer for his... for all the questions you ask him, every answer will be the Muppet soundtrack.
I'm all over that.
Yeah.
I'm all over that.
He could speak passionately and from the heart about the Muppet soundtrack.
I did see that there was something on social media yesterday saying that you can now stay in the lighthouse that was used on Fraggle Rock for £33 a night.
Isn't the lighthouse... Wait, thinking back, is it a real location? Or is it just a model? I can't remember.
I'm not too sure. I mean, I think the trash heap and that, I believe they were models, but the lighthouse, I believe, was a legit lighthouse.
£33? Yeah. Dollars? Is it pounds or dollars?
Pounds.
Are you considering it?
I mean, I like the fact that the only thing that was swaying your decision was it pounds or dollars?
I mean, if it's dollars, I mean, obviously I'm out, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we could always do some kind of podcast thing.
Yeah.
There. I don't know, some Fraggles podcast. I mean, how much mileage is there in Fraggles? I'm not sure.
Ask Brett Goldstein.
It's Muppets, not Fraggles.
Same thing. Same thing. It's all Henson.
You're going to get tweets and emails. Is it Jim Henson? Sorry.
Yeah.
We'll get to the music part in a bit. Okay. Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's the same thing.
Buddy Peace.
Yes.
The song with the greatest ever intro.
Obviously, with every... episode of your podcast, everyone's always like, oh, how can you pick an intro? Same thing with me. I should say at the start, the answer to all of these questions could be summed up by Push the Feeling On by Nightcrawlers. I'm not going to do that. The best intro for me is Think by Lynn Collins. It's basically Think by Lynn Collins. If you showed it in a sort of the waveform of the track, if you had that up on a screen, and then you removed every single part that was sampled by somebody over the years, you'd just be left with slivers and tiny segments, because it's basically been completely filleted and gutted over the years, like however many years it's been out there. But yeah, the intro it's like this beautiful. Sort of like a monologue, but like it's sort of like preaching almost. So like she sort of, it starts off like, "Hey fellas," and then
bam,
I'm
bam,
talking to you, you,
bam.
yeah, and it's like that, just that sort of that announcement of that, that's really dramatic, and then you hear her come in, and then it's like, all right, I'm with you, whatever you got to say, let's, I'm on track, and then it just sort of sets it up perfectly because it gets you all kind of like amped up, and then it's like, all right, now what. And then obviously it kicks in like, you better, and then it all just kicks in.
Almost with a scar up stroke, hasn't it? Like, it's got almost like a skank to it before it gets to the best bit.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't actually notice that. But yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, hip-hop music, which is sort of where I come from, like, that's the music I'm most familiar with, spend the most time with. Like, I know it, like, intimately and weirdly sort of, just got like a weird photographic memory with a lot of stuff from the 90s. And the intro, it's just been used on so many things. So like even before I heard it, when I was listening to it for the first time as a complete song, I knew all these bits, like, what, oh, that's from that, what, and that. And like my brain was just going off because it was so excited because it's like, oh, I recognise that bit. And and then you listen to it, you get to the like, a third of the way through it, and then suddenly there's this drum break kicks in. It's like, oh, that's from that. Another minute on, another drum break, different drum break. They sped that up for drum and bass, like, you know, jungle and stuff. And anyway, but yeah, the intro itself is just really, it's just one of those ones where, like, it just gets the hairs on your back and neck sort of poking up, and it just gets you really sort of excited, I think.
Do you think that kind of annunciation at the beginning is something that instantly kind of resonates with you, because so many hip hop records are almost introduced. Like, I'm thinking of Public Enemy straight away.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, then it's bang, in comes the beat. It's like hip hop's got some of the greatest intros ever.
I mean, yeah, that's why it was such a struggle. I mean, of course, now my mind's firing blanks. I can't think of
it. Ante Up, what an incredible intro.
Yes. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that's another one where, like, you, oh, damn it. Considering an instant U-turn on my decision. No, I can't, I've got to commit. But yeah, no, you're right. And like, Public Enemy, they're so entrenched in James Brown and JB samples.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, their whole of Takes a Nation of Millions is like, the amount of JB's samples in there is just insane. So you know that they've spent a lot of time with that music and Lynn Collins and all the sort of James Brown people. And, so yeah, I'm sure they were heavily influenced by that kind of the way to kick a song off.
Yeah.
That instant sort of, you know, there's no like slow build up and lush chords. It's just like, yeah, you know, in there.
Can you remember when you first heard it?
No. And it's weird because it's one of those songs that just feels like it's always been there in my mind. Like I can't pinpoint it at all. I think it's probably cause, like, also a lot of these answers are down to my brother. So like he got me into hip hop, funk, jungle, drum and bass, all that kind of stuff. And you probably know this. I'm sure a lot of people listen to this, but like the Ultimate Breaks and Beats series. So like just this collection of sort of, it's like the early series of bootlegs, which are basically all funk and weird like rock songs that had open drum breaks on them. And it was on one of those. So I think it was probably through that, like my brother collected all of them. There was 26 volumes specifically. If you had all 26, you can make a jungle album, you can make a hip-hop album, or like many albums through those. Like there's so many samples on them. It's probably that, and then just trying to sort of juggle two copies of it, trying to get that little, there's a tiny little like two bar drum break in it, and you know, trying to catch that. And I reckon it was probably that. Like I didn't chance upon it, I just sort of knew it was there. But yeah, it wasn't like a discovery. It was just sort of presented to me, and then it was like left to me to sort of like get familiar with it, I suppose.
So growing up, was there music on at home aside from like, you know, an older brother, I imagine, when you?
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah. He's like a few years older, yeah.
And so like, but even earlier, was like parents playing music?
I was thinking about this because I've heard a good few of these episodes of your podcast before, and like I was thinking of it, and I know like I think in the car was where that happened. So like, I know my mum and dad had really good taste in music. If I tell you what we used to listen to, you would probably say that's not the case at all, because like we used to listen to a lot of like Dire Straits, and I think of it as, and this isn't a diss, but like sad dad music. So like I can imagine like a dad driving in the rain, like with tears in his eyes, like listening to Dire Straits. We used to listen to a lot of that, like this really melancholic sort of, and that is sort of like, I always knew it was made by like a lot older people than me. And
so would this have been like mid to late 80s?
Yeah.
And so, that music was pop music then. It's quite, as much as you had the Stock Aitken and Waterman pop, and you had the early, you know, sounds of acid house and hip hop happening, the biggest selling albums was Brothers in Arms, was Phil Collins, was Chris Rea.
And all of these
people looked like your dad's mates. They didn't look like pop stars. And
so right.
And it's quite weird when you actually think, like, you know, if you look at like bands like Level 42, that I remember when I was like probably like 14 seeing them on Top of the Pops. Imagining they were like 50.
They
probably weren't. They were probably like late 20s, but everybody looks so fucking old.
I know. Yeah, it's right. Like, I don't know what it was. I think it was something to do with the hair as well. Because, like, when I saw early pictures of, like, Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits and the other dude from Level 42, it's like they always had that, like, thinning up top. So it just, like, automatically made them look like just, I don't know, always, like, impossibly old. And, but
I need to find out how old Mark Knopfler is, because I'll be so curious to find out how old he was at the kind of mid-90s Mark Knopfler.
Wait, before you do that, I'm going to go with, like, so their early albums were like late 70s.
Right.
I'm going to say he was born in, I'm going to go with 55. So I'm saying he's, does that make him 65?
Right, okay.
55. What have you got?
He's born in 49, he's 70. So he was actually quite old.
Yeah.
So yeah, that completely discredits everything I just said. Yeah, he had every right to be losing his hair. He was probably in his 40s. But yeah, all right. So for track two, I want to know what the first song was, buddy, that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
All right, so this is really frustrating because I've got one answer and then I've got two tied answers. I don't know how are you with...
You have honourable mentions. Of course you can.
Can I?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So it's weird. I was thinking back to the earliest song. I can't think of it because it's all sort of mixed up in that Dire Straits pool. Like there was, I remember like, I think it was Romeo and Juliet, Dire Straits, like the live version, because we listened to Alchemy, the double live album, so much, like front to back all day. Like we went on this family holiday to Portugal and we listened to it. That was like the one tape we had in the car. So I know it like back to front.
Fucking hell, that's conditioning.
Yeah. It's yeah, brainwashing, verging on child abuse. But no, it set me up. Like it was very formative years because it was sort of that spending so much time with one album or a double album, but like, yes, like spending a real, like that's how I listen to music as well. Like I get really familiar with the albums and then I just sort of, it's just there. It's always there forever. But anyway, so I didn't go back to Dire Straits. I went back to not too long ago because this is the one song that's made me cry more than a few times. So it's this track called Brother by Beck. And I don't know if it was just sort of at that time, I think I was like, this was about 98 or 7 or something like that. I'm 40 now, so this was when I was about 17 or 18. There were tracks before this that got me all wobbly or whatever, but this is the one that actively hit a point in me, which was like oh shit, what's happening? Oh God. And then, yeah, and then I'd just be crying, like, it's just fairly simple. Like the song, I think it seems to be about like the death of a brother or something like that. So, and for this answer, I've gone with sad and melancholy for the emotion. Like, and I was thinking, wow, but it could be like happy and overjoyed. And I mean, there's a good few of them, but I just went with, this was like, because it had a real physical reaction and it made something happen and my eyes started watering and all this stuff. And so I just went with that one because I don't know if it's a real, so like if the lyrics are based on a real event or whatever. But when I listen to it, it's just like it's sort of like, you know, in a film you get that kind of and you get that sort of, that little wobble and the it's like you get like, you bloody made me cry. And yeah, it's sort of one of those. And I think it'll always make me wobble a bit, but there was a year or so when I sort of, like when you need to cry sort of thing, like sometimes if you, it's like there's something building up in you and sometimes it's just as simple as like, you just got to let out some tears and then it's like, okay, right, I'm good. And there's one of those I sort of went back to every now and again. It's like, I'm feeling a bit wound up and then put that on and And
you a big Beck fan?
These days, not so much. He's gone a bit, I don't know if the term is trappy, but there's a lot of like quick succession hi-hats and I think he's been working with Pharrell quite a lot recently.
Right.
God bless you.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, not so much these days, but the old stuff when he was just doing weird lo-fi.
Before he joined a religious cult.
Oh, he's always been religious. He was born a Scientologist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently, like his parents are like deep in it. So apparently, it's always been there.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which I didn't know. And when you look back, it's like, you start thinking like, does that affect my view on him? And it's like, it doesn't really. Like, I don't really
mind. That's interesting because I've had this conversation a lot with people about being able to separate the man from the art. And, you know, as and generally I have to do that because I'm a huge fan of Morrissey's music. And the Smiths and and he says some fucking awful things at the moment. And so you know, and there's and I guess it does. It certainly tainted my opinion of Beck when I found out he was a Scientologist. But I don't know why. It has no bearing on me. Like,
and also, I think it's like if you felt like you'd been tricked, like, you bamboozled me, you sucker. Like, if he was sort of trying to crowbar in mentions to it. And there's actually one track on, I think the album's The Information, and there's like maybe like a 10-minute song. And towards the end of it, it's got these weird vocal samples of like, I remember hearing it and thinking, no, you're trying to smuggle messages into this one. It's really eerie, and it's like, I feel like it's just talking about Scientology, and it's like trying to promote it, and it's really eerie, and I don't like that. But, I mean, it's up to me whether I listen to him or not. Like, if I choose not to listen to him, I'm going to be as open to or closed to Scientology as if I did listen to him.
Completely.
I mean, it's my shout. Like, I'm confident, and I'm not going to be sort of brainwashed into doing anything I don't want to do. So, I just like his older stuff, I think. Like, when he was on like K Records doing like weird jangly indie stuff and lo-fi.
One of the greatest performers I've ever seen as well. When I saw him on the, when Sex Laws come out, and I saw him
as the Prince
white
phase.
Suit, and it was full, like, he had full backing singers, brass section. It was like seeing the Temptations, and he was just dancing like a motherfucker. It was so good. It was so good.
I've seen his kid dance. Like, he brings his kid out on stage. Well, there was a period where he was doing it, and his kid was like a little newborn baby goat. He's just like jumping up in the air. It's like, oh, you're going to be mini Beck when you're older.
Brilliant.
So just quick, just to crowbar in the honourable mentions, is that right?
Yeah, of course.
I feel like I barged my way into
what
you were going to say.
Get your honourable mentions in.
All right, so They Reminisce Over You by Pete Rock and CL Smooth and 93 to Infinity by Souls of Mischief, two hip-hop tracks that made me feel things. They Reminisce Over You, the lyrics, obviously, it's about this rapper called Trouble T. Roy, who I don't know much about, but I know it's about him and various sort of... It's like a nostalgic rap song. Mainly because of the horn sample at the start. I'm sure a lot of people listening will know it. It's this guy called Tom Scott. I know the guy producing this, 76, will know it for sure. It hits a really nice spot. Like, for a hip-hop song, it's just got this really kind of like instant nostalgic feel to it. I don't know how it does it, but it just does it. And 93 to Infinity is like a hip-hop version of like a Extra Strong Mint or something. It's just like a really...
Explain that, buddy.
I don't know if I can. It's almost like a synesthesia response I get from it. It's like when you hear it, it's something to do, like, so it's this old like a fusion loop from what's he called, Billy Cobham, he's called. So it's like a sped up loop of him, and it's filtered, so it's just sort of like a bit muffled. And it's the kind of thing, if you played it loud, it almost like clears the air, and it's like it gives you that sort of, it's like taking an intake of breath from the top of a mountain or something. It's just a really, really cleansing and pure sort of sound. And I think a lot of these things are to do with like the quality of the sample. So like that's my ears always tuned to that, and I can tell usually if somebody's used a certain sample or a certain effect. Like, so for instance, the Pete Rock and CL Smooth one is all made on this sample called the SP-1200, which is a very specific early 90s, late 80s hip-hop drum sampler. Like, you get a really gritty, weird sound quality from it. And, so things like that. It's like the textures, the way it's just like, it just starts on the one, and it's like, again, Souls of Mischief one has got like an intro where it's like they're announcing what's going to happen, basically. And, Extra Strong Mint, I don't know.
I get it. It's a palate cleanser, right?
I think that would have been a much more easy to understand.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. These songs that you was hearing when you was young, where was home when you was young?
So, well, I was born in Brighton, moved away when I was three to, well, with my parents, not just by myself. I'm hitting the road.
I've had enough of this.
Yeah, sucks. No, so I was born in Brighton, lived there for 3 years, moved to Kingston in Surrey, near Richmond, arm's length from London. And, yeah, so, like, growing up was Kingston, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, sort of around Surrey till I was in my 20s, really.
Okay, well, let's go back to them, those moments when you've moved and you're in Kingston. Because for track three, buddy, I want to know what the song was that reminds you of your time at school.
So this one is, I have to go back to, and this is kind of awkward because I don't know how else to say it. Basically, this song is tied into when I hit puberty. So okay. it's completely linked up to... So my brother had a friend who was well into Prince, and he made him a Prince compilation tape. And it had songs on it. It didn't have the dirtiest Prince songs, like there's a track called Head that Prince does, and it didn't have that on it, because I think that would have been a bit not friendly... Not like mum driving the car friendly to play in the car.
There's a lot of Prince records that fit that.
yeah, for instance. So anyway, it had a few tracks on there that like it had You Got the Look on it and it's a few other bits and pieces, and it was like weirdly synchronised with the time when I started noticing girls and stuff and having feelings about the opposite sex. And
Prince noticed girls a lot.
Yeah, he had a keenly trained eye. It seems. And so, yeah, like that, like I can totally remember like hearing the songs and it just that weird, like all the feelings being mixed up with.
Cause, like, sexual awakening.
Yeah, I don't know why it feels weird. It feels kind of awkward. I don't talk about this stuff with anyone really. So it's all like when you gave me the list of questions and I was just sort of like, oh shit, I think it's that. And then, yeah, so... Because music's obviously so personal to us all, and like some people, like it's really stitched into their personalities, and I feel like that's the case with me. So it's like when I talk about music, I sort of either don't know how to explain it, or it's just so linked into feelings and like experiences and stuff, and it's like it's almost like everything is soundtracked really intimately and sort of. Yeah, and it's definitely, this Prince mixtape was that, basically, the soundtrack to my awakening. So anyway, the track on there, which I'm going to go for, is Bat Dance, which was on the Batman soundtrack from 89, I think. Not because it has any, you know, sexual content or whatever, but because... it had so many weird sample-y elements to it, and it was like, oh wow, he sampled bits from the film and he's mixed it in, and he's like, all the vocals are in time, so he's like, he had his own vocals on there, and then it had Michael Keaton samples on there, and it was all like in time, and he was sort of reacting to the samples, and it's like that was like one of the first moments I realised, like, oh yeah, you can take dialogue off stuff and interweave it into a pop tune, and it was pretty fresh track as well. Yeah. I mean, I think back then it was probably seen as a total gimmick.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't
know. Yeah, you tell me. Cause
I
like,
don't know if it was number one, but it was a huge hit.
And it had a good video as well.
And it was a great video. And and I think, I'm trying to think where that would have been in Prince's career. I guess he was still huge at that time. It would have been pre Diamonds and Pearls, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
so
it
would have been maybe...
89.
Yeah,
or 90, because that was when Batman came out.
So that would have been after Graffiti Bridge. Am I right there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Graffiti Bridge was, man, I'm not the biggest Prince expert, but I feel like that's like mid to late 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Prince fan, and I love the Batman soundtrack. I think it's fucking great. I have no interest in Batman. No interest in the films, but yeah, loved it. He could do no wrong as far as I was concerned at that point.
And it's funny, like, because all the stuff, there's so much stuff that's come out recently of his music that was like, oh, like he was always making music, like, all the time. Like he was just insanely prolific. Yeah. And like, I mean, there's one album called Crystal Ball or something, and it's like, I swear it's like 10 CDs. And it's like, well, when did this come out? Like, what the fuck? It's like full albums, like 74 minutes on a CD. And it's like,
I went and bought, like, literally, I think I kind of gave up on Prince, like, as being an avid follower. Maybe, I can't even think what the album was after Diamonds and Pearls, but it wasn't long after that I kind of, I'd found other things that you know, I'd given a lot of time to Prince, and I still adored him.
You served your time.
But I did go and buy all the albums I never bought.
Yeah.
Lots of ones, even the one that come free with the Sunday Times or whatever it was one year.
That was a weird one.
and it is a weird one. And it, you know, I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying he did make some records that weren't quite as good.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You listen to so much of his stuff and it's like, there's a bit of a clunker. Maybe that was designed to be in the sort of, to be considered pile.
Yeah,
but
completely.
At the same time, it's like, then there's that Piano and a Microphone album that came out.
So good.
Looking at the first track is incredible. Like, yeah. It's like...
I forgot all about that album.
It's amazing. Like, he's just singing like the first track. It's just this lush, like... Do you know Moody Man or K.D. Tatum, I think it is as well, and like that sort of Detroit house, like those kind of dudes. It's got that feel to it, and he's just playing, and it's just like this sort of loopy piano riff, and then he's just saying, like, "Oh, you can turn the lights down," and then he's just singing, and it's like, "Yeah, a little bit more," and it's just like him jamming with a piano. Mm. It's gorgeous, like it's so nice, and also because it's sort of tied into that Black Klansman film, so it's like there's a lot of weight to it as well because it's presented in that context.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So yeah, Prince is.
How was school?
Tough but fair. For a long time, I had long hair down, like halfway down my back. So I was like, I think when I was 13, I had long hair. Don't know why. I think I was into metal, and I just picked that choice, which is weird because I was really shy as a kid. So it was quite a bold step for a really shy kid.
So you ridiculed for that?
Weirdly, I wasn't. And I think I was all the time, I was on the edge, I was like expecting to be. But I didn't really get a lot of stick for it. I don't think people knew how to take me because it was like, they probably thought I was going to be some like crazy, like sort of metal kid, but I was really softly spoken and like not very outgoing. So I think I was a bit of a, like, he could be a, I don't know. Let's just sort of, let's go easy on him. You never know.
He could have a list.
Yeah. Yeah. Jot you down.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah. What did you want to be at school?
The DJing thing came pretty soon. So I said, like, yeah, when I was 13, I had long hair. Basically, when I was 13, I started DJing, again, totally down to my brother. So I think I just wanted to be a DJ. And, I mean, I can't say I'm a full-time DJ now, but, I mean, I can still do my thing. Like, I spent a lot of time practicing and getting pretty good, like scratching and sort of a lot, just like hip hop stuff.
I can verify that, mate. I've seen you play.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, so like, I definitely sort of spent a lot of time in the trenches doing that. I didn't, and semi still don't really have a plan or like a sort of. I know vaguely it involves sound, but I also know how many aspects of sound there are and how many weird angles into the world there are too.
Sure.
So I leave it open, and I don't have like a specific kind of, there's no real, I don't want to say goal or like
master plan.
Yeah, there isn't. It's, I'm just sort of like, I say yes to stuff. I'm going to say no to things too, but I mean, mainly say yes to stuff and see what happens.
Yeah. And so at school, 13 years of age, you're into metal, but I take it you've been exposed to hip hop as well at this point.
Yeah, so hip hop for the first time. I mean, again, this is just my brother's doing all this stuff. So like, he'd bring back from wherever he'd been with his mates, like tapes of Eazy-E and Ice-T and stuff like that. So I was like exposed to the harder side back then.
And so as a metaler, had you heard Body Can, and had you heard like, you know, the Judgment Judgment Night soundtrack been out then?
Yeah, well, that came after, so I'd made a few lines in the sand by that point. So like the metal stuff was.
Metal were you listening to?
Just kind of obvious stuff. I mean, it is like metal, indie, or back then grunge, I suppose you call it, and then like punk. So mm-hmm. It'd be, well, I don't know where you'd put Primus in there. It was like Primus was there, Dead Kennedys, a lot of Dead Kennedys, old Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Megadeth. Mm-hmm.
And for those stuff. For those that are unaware of Primus's music,
you better act like you know.
I mean, I don't know how to
describe it.
Fucking hell, you describe it. Les Claypool playing some really widdly diddly diddly stuff on a bass guitar.
He's a very proficient bassist. Mm. Yeah. I think it's sort of like prog for grunge heads.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. It got. I mean, I discovered them through being into the Chili Peppers and Fishbone and.
Oh, yeah.
Bands of that ilk. They got thrown Living Colour. They got thrown with that sort of thing.
Totally.
But yeah, Mr. Bungle, all of that sort of stuff. Just
Faith No More, actually, as well. Yeah, that's another. Yeah, Faith No More. I used to know the real thing inside out as well.
Like, that's an incredible record.
That's so good. And then the live version as well. I had the VHS of that as well.
Yeah, I had the VHS of that. That was so good.
Man.
One of the greatest vocalists ever, I think, Mike Patton. I think his voice is absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And he's matey with a lot of the weird hip hop people.
Like, all right.
As well. So like, he did a record with Tunde from TV on the Radio, and do you know Dose One?
No.
He's part of. There's a group called Cloud Dead, and they're on this label Anticon. You probably know Anticon.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. They're the sort of they got lumped in with this sort of left field hip hop movement around like the late 90s, early aughts, whatever.
Yeah.
So he did a record with the guy from TV and the Radio and Dose One called Nevermen, and that was on Lex Records. So
right.
Like, he's still, he messes around with that a lot. And Peeping Tom as well. There's Mike Patton was in Peeping Tom, which is him. Again, the dude from Cloud Dead, this guy Odd Nosdam, Gel, one of my favourite producers. Yeah, so like it's like funny seeing him as an adult. I'm like, what? I used to listen to you when I was 10.
I'm pretty damn sure Faith No More are playing in the UK soon.
No way.
Yeah. I think they've all got back together without Big Jim. I don't think Big Jim's there.
Is he not with us anymore?
I believe he's alive, but he hasn't been in Faith No More since maybe Angel Dust, I think. I think he quit.
Man.
Okay. First song you bought from a record shop?
This is another two-pronged answer. So this was when I was living in Kingston, so this would have been I meant to look this up. Because the record is Live Is Life by Opus.
La, 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 la.
Live Is Life. I had no business listening to this song when I was... I want to say 6 or 7. I feel like it could have been even 5. I don't know. I got it in 7-inch from Earl Price in Kingston, which was in Eden Walk, just to prove that I was there and I'm not making it up. So, yeah, Earl Price was the spot, basically, for music. Yeah, I don't know why that was the first record I got. I think I liked the cover, maybe the video I saw. I've listened to it in sort of past years, and it's not good. Have you heard it much recently at all?
Or? I've not heard it for a while. It was on a compilation album I had growing up, and I remember that I had a video. It just sounds like if you was at a German beer festival, it'd be the best song to ever come on.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm going to sound dreadfully racist. I don't know if they were German or Austrian.
No,
or...
I think they were European.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking, I think yeah, it was. At the time I didn't realise, but
yeah.
I saw the video and it's like, okay, yeah, no, I think they were.
No one had haircuts like that in the UK then.
Wouldn't have dared. I've got no affinity with this song either. Like, I don't listen back.
Your first record you bought, you're not meant to. Do you know what I mean? It's okay, like it's for that purpose only.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
an entry point. You know, you've got to start somewhere. And I've said it many times on this podcast. Like, I've had so many people come in here, and I don't think anyone's ever said, I bought this obscure Dead Kennedys. No, you didn't.
Yeah, you're just trying to be cool.
Exactly. So, yeah, don't worry, mate. There's nothing wrong with Opus.
Well, it was rapidly followed up by Dancing in the Street by David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
I mean, that's fucking worse.
Cheers, pal.
I mean, that video, I guarantee, is worse than the Opus.
They played it. I mean, I don't watch Family Guy, but for some reason I caught an episode once, and they literally played as a cutaway scene the entire video of Dancing in the Street. And at the end, Stewie says, "We let that happen," and or like, "That was our fault that happened," or something like that. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's really bad.
Oh no, it's terrifically bad. Yeah,
Titanic. That was because I think they recorded the video and the song in 24 hours. Live Aid, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
And it was some sort of charity thing that they done it. And I mean, I imagine everybody that is listening to this has seen that video. If you haven't,
I don't know. Whoa. Are you going to suggest people look it up?
Oh my God, yeah, it's something to behold.
Oh, man.
Just the outfits.
Did they have to?
Like Bowie's doing this sort of weird sort of like skipping down the road while Jagger's just like this out of control elastic band in a really bad kind of like green shirt. My God.
You haven't whitewashed up. You haven't like, what's the word? Fumigated it from your mind like I have.
No.
I remember like shapes of it, but I'm trying to gradually sort of let it fade away. But how much cocaine in that video shoot? Insane amounts.
Yeah, it's not good. It's really not good.
I've got one other one.
Go on.
Which was, so that's the entry point.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for the permission to have that as just an entry point. We can gloss over that. But then the main one, which this is like the cool response, which is there's a hip hop group called Alcoholics. They had a song called Liquid, which is, it's not like a massive tune at all, but it's important because it's like the first import hip hop 12 inch I got, which is in Troublesome Records in Kingston in the Apple Market. They had drum and bass back then it was Dutch Jungle on the ground floor, House on the second floor, and then you had to make your way through up to the top floor to get to the hip hop. So at that was when I had long hair, so that was when I'd have to sort of steel myself and sort of like barge through the jungle lot and then the house lot upstairs. So then you have to sort of get up to the top, dust yourself off, and I'm like, okay, all right. And then, yeah. So that was like the first rap record I bought, and I don't have to include it really, but it was just like that was key. It's like almost like I have to say it just so it's out of my system, just to respect it sort of thing.
Can you remember the hip hop track? Do you know what it was? I was playing some hip hop this morning. I was just going through Spotify and I was kind of reminiscing, mm-hmm. and I found and I thought right, Oh my God, a track came into my head that I used to DJ at in my rock club.
Pink Toothbrush?
Yeah. So, well, we play a lot of hip-hop there. I mean, Ice-T's played the Toothbrush.
In person?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yeah, when Power come out, he played the Brush. Rob Bass played the Brush.
He wants to rock right now.
He does, to that Lynn Collins.
Stay away from him if you're contagious.
Yeah. Oh, God. BDP played.
No.
Yeah, it's got a...
Are you sure?
Yeah, Marley Marr. We've had some hip-hop on, mate.
Dude. Have you got... Wait, sorry, just a sidebar. Have you got any documentation of it?
Yes. Yeah, there's flyers, tickets. There's an amazing... I mean, I've not got the photo, but before Ice come out on stage, he sent his then-wife out, who was the cover star...
Darlene.
At she come... in the white bikini.
No.
And the crowd went crazy while he stood nodding at the side of the stage, and then he come out. And I think went straight into Let's Get Butt Naked and Fuck.
Oh, I love him. I love Ice-T so much. He's hilarious. No, wait, sorry. But you were saying you listened to some hip-hop.
Yes, and I just remembered a track, and I was like, oh, my God, I've not heard that since the early 90s.
Yeah.
And... it's not on Spotify, and I just thought, is it still good? And you're a hip-hop aficionado. Do you remember Young Black Teenagers, Tap the Bottle?
And Twist the Cap?
Yeah.
A person around a group because of groovy, all that? Yeah.
Does it still hold up?
It's a tricky one, because I think back then, the name and the image was problematic.
Okay.
So they were called Young Black Teenagers. None of them were black. They were.
Oh, really?
I think they were all just sort of like... quite wealthy white kids.
Ah.
I think I remember seeing pictures of them, and yeah, it was like there was a lot of like, yeah, white kids, and I think that was the people had a problem with the name, because it's a name you have to explain, so it's like you wouldn't see it and think, oh, they're making a statement or it's a joke or something. You'd be like, why do you call yourselves that? Like,
yeah,
what are you trying to do? And I never really got what the point was.
Yeah,
it's like,
didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. But yeah, that I like the beat for it. But
yeah.
All the, I think the rhymes were always kind of that, like biggity 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 biggity. Is that sort of like basic 90s?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Style.
Yeah.
Like sort of bit Daz FX, a bit everything else that was going around.
Yeah.
Like at that point. But so that's not on Spotify.
No.
So
I can't remember the beat, I can't remember the rap style, but I just remember when it came out thinking, God, that's good.
Yeah.
But I
think if you were playing a 93 set, it would be fun.
Yeah.
It's got all that sort of like horns and crashy drums. I mean, it's on paper, it's totally up my street, but there is a lot of cultural issues that I think even at that age I had with it.
And I don't think I would see what they look like. Oh, so that's quite weird that they're white guys called Young Black Teenagers.
Yeah. Well, because I used to get... there was a magazine called The Source, which was like...
Of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know that. So I was reading it back then, and I remember they used to get a lot of stick back then. The Source had a lot of... they got a lot of stick as well. So, like, if they didn't get... so, like, the rating system was 5 mics. That was the top rating you could give an album. And, like, if an album didn't get 5 mics, then they'd get the equivalent now would be like really angry tweets. So they'd get loads of letters saying, oh, the fuck are you doing? Like, I'm going to come out and shoot you. And all this kind of stuff. Like, real, like, heavy abuse. But apparently, like, the backstory of that magazine is deep as well. Like, the guy who started it, and there's basically a documentary or a podcast series waiting to be made about that. Like, yeah, there's a lot going on in that world. It's fascinating. But, sadly deceased now. R.I.P. The Source.
Track 5. The song that soundtracked your years in clubland.
Well, I'm not a clubber.
No?
And I never really went clubbing.
Do DJs enjoy clubbing? I don't.
You mean going to a club and performing the act of clubbing?
No. I don't mind going there and DJing or promoting, but I don't really want to go to a nightclub and have a dance or a drink.
That's basically my position on it. Like, my DJing was mainly like warm up sets, so it might be, I mean, it's like, it would be a bit easier for me because the crowd would be there to see. I mean, for instance, there's like one show I played, which was Danger Mouse and Gemini, and it was like the whole crowd were there to see them, and they liked Organized Confusion, which is it was Prince Poe. No, it wasn't Danger Mouse and Gemini. Danger Mouse and Prince Po from Organised Confusion. So the whole crowd was there to see Prince Po, and they would have obviously known Organised Confusion, which is like early 90s hip-hop. So my set was early 90s hip-hop, so I couldn't really go wrong with it. So sets like that were really cool, because it was like, I didn't really have to sort of work the crowd. It was like,
sure,
what I play fit into what they were going to be watching, so it's all good. But clubbing, I'm not that confident with a set where people could come up to you and say, "Oh, mate, you know, deal with the request stuff." It's like, I'm not as arrogant to sort of be like, I don't take requests, like, I don't care what you want to hear, I want to play what I want to hear. It's like, it's not that, but it's more, it's the angry drunk requests. Like, if you don't play this, me and my mates are gonna, you know, do their thing, their violent thing to you. So clubbing, I've sort of linked it in with that a bit, I think, as well. And when I was younger, I used to have this vision of, like, if I went to a club, I'd probably get into some trouble and get into a fight. I wasn't violent. I was just worried about being picked on and, like, getting into, you know, trouble that I couldn't resolve. So I kind of kept away from them a bit. So I wasn't really, like, a teenage raver or anything like that. So it was tricky to give you an answer for this one. But I think, out of respect to breakdancers and, you know, like B-boys and B-girls and stuff, I think I'm just going to go with Apache, Incredible Bongo Band, because I've seen that played in clubs, and the reaction, like, when the break part comes in, which is the part where all the breakdancers obviously go nuts, like, I've seen that reaction a few times, and it's stunning, and it's like, all right, I know it's coming, let's see what happens, and yeah, it's... Out of respect to breakdancers, I think I'm just going to go with that, because I don't club, so I'll pass the baton to the
I am. We had Africa Bambaataa come to the Brush and DJ.
Oh yeah.
A few times, but the time he came around 2000. This was kind of before all these kind of allegations and stuff about him.
I was going to say, I didn't want to bum anyone out, but yeah, that's like another art separating the art from the artist thing, isn't it?
I don't know if anything's been kind of through the courts or anything on that.
I'm not sure but
he bought these two MCs and they danced as well over to accompany him on stage.
Yeah.
And he stood there in some really bad, like, Primark sort of jogging bottoms. Didn't take one hand out of his pocket for the entire set, just DJed with one hand. Wasn't wearing all the kind of Zulu Nation head shit. I wanted the full thing, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's part of the agreement.
But he played amazing records. But what was great was, as the promoter, I'd kind of mentioned it to some of the people that when I was in the first year at senior school, whether the fifth year, someone to call breakdancers in my school.
Yeah.
And word had got out that Bambaataa was, and so was coming local. And everybody from my school that I remember being like the cool kids that had the really cool trainers and stuff that could do head spins and stuff, turned up for this one night, and they started breaking. Because it's a wooden sprung dance floor, so the dance floor sort of opened up and they started breaking. Bambaataa's MC then jumped down on the floor and they were up rocking and it just was amazing. Magical. And it was all to Incredible Bongo.
Really?
Man. Yeah.
Oh.
I got to witness breakdancing to Apache in my own club being played by Bambaataa.
It's weird. It's like, it's so embedded in, like, if anyone's going to start breakdancing, it's like, if you have an inkling to go down that path, then there's going to be something in you that will respond to that song. And it's like, I mean, even I do it. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm not going to breakdance, but I'm going to do something to it, because when it comes in, it's just sort of like, and again, one of those sort of like, and like, statements of intention, da, 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 a little bit of build up, and then it just comes in. It's like,
so good, so good.
Powerful.
And it was our mutual friend DJ Destruction that introduced me to that album. And I heard Bongo Rock before I heard Apache. Yeah. Have you watched the documentary?
No. What?
They've made the film about Apache, about the Incredible Bongo Beat Man. No. Oh, there's a film.
What's it called?
I think it might be called Apache.
I had no idea about this.
And it breaks down the whole making of that album. Like, oh, it's incredible. Like,
that's homework for sure. Wow.
Remind me when this finishes, I'll play you the trailer because it's a bit special.
Jesus.
Okay. Buddy, for track 6, your favourite song from an artist from your home county.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Another difficult one because, I say, I was born in Brighton. I'm not very good with locations and where people are from, apart from hip-hop people. When it comes to sort of local stuff and... like people from Brighton, for instance, there's probably so many, but I spaced on it. I looked it up on Wikipedia, like couldn't really see anyone that clicked with me specifically. Looked up London, Surrey, Kingston. There are people, and then there's like, it said that, oh, Sandy Denny was born in Kingston. And then I looked it up, and it's like, no, she wasn't. She was born in Merton. And so I can't say Sandy Denny because she was born in Merton. I don't know where Merton is. Anyway, long story short, I went with a guy called Dave House, who is, like, he put me on to Sam Duckworth, Get Kate, Wear Kate, Fly, because they were, like, good mates for ages, similar style of music, like, sort of like, I guess, for ease of reference, like, Billy Bragg-inspired singer-songwriter acoustic, like, political, societal, sort of very personal stuff, but, like, linked to bigger themes, you know? So, yeah, Dave House was, like, I don't know, it's sort of a bit Neil Young as well. So, similar vocal tone, I suppose, to Neil Young, but like a little bit less nasal, I guess. But
from Surrey?
Yeah, sorry. So, I think he was from, I might have been from Staines or something like that. I can't really remember. But anyway, we worked together in Beggar's Banquet in Kingston. So, like, I was working there from 2001 to 6 or 7 or something like that. And Dave House was always there. And eventually he lived above the shop for a bit. And, like, we got on really well. And, like, we were from totally different musical backgrounds. But, like, he put me on to so much sort of punk and hardcore and indie stuff and, like, folky bits and stuff like that. But he did an album called Kingston's Current. And it's, like, if you're not from Kingston and you weren't around Kingston at that time... or shopped at Beggar's Banquet at that time, you're probably going to never have seen or heard this album. I looked up on Spotify and there's an album called something like... it's gone. Anyway, there's an album that's got tons of tracks in it. This whole album is on that list of tracks. But yeah, it just brings back that era and... like working with him and getting to know him and then, you know, Get Kate, Wear Kate, Fly and all that kind of sort of crowd. And yeah, it's just a really lovely sort of, it's like a really nice salute to Kingston. And I was there for my formative years, so like, you know, say I was born in Brighton, but to me it's like a nice place. Like, I don't really have any sort of real roots there or anything. Yeah. Kingston was where everything happened and I sort of got into so many different kinds of music and made so many friends there and stuff. So yeah, gonna go over a shout out to Dave House and Kingston's Current. It's definitely on Spotify.
So. I will check him out.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sweet song. It's maybe shows its age a bit. I'm not... Like, I had to listen to it the other day, and it's like... I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's... he'd probably be the first to say, like, he'd go back and tweak loads of stuff. Because he's really meticulous with the mastering and mixing and all this kind of stuff. But, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like... that's just how it is. Like,
yeah.
It's frozen in time now. So, yeah, it's a lovely one. I like it.
Final track. A song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Do you know a guy called Jason Molina?
No.
Have you heard of Songs Ohio?
No.
Have you heard of Magnolia Electric Company?
No.
So, the guy, Jason Molina, who he is the lead singer of all of these bands. He died a few years ago. He had this crazy alcoholic life, basically. And I had no idea until he died. And it was like, wow, okay, damn, that's really harsh. But before that, he's got this back catalogue of real, just totally beautiful, I guess you call it Americana. So it's sort of rocky, indie-ish, again, to bring up Neil Young, that kind of style, heavy rock, but like not political. It's just it has it's you know, I mentioned that sort of like personal linking to broader themes, so kind of abstract but very personal, but also inferring sort of like universal stuff, so like the micro to macro kind of like detail and then broader themes type approach, I guess. Anyway, so he made this album, or his band made an album. They were called Magnolia Electric Company. The song was called Farewell Transmission, and it's like the first track on this album, like self-titled album. It's one that you just have to look up and hear. Like, I'm not really sure how to explain it, but it starts off with a riff, and then from then on it just goes off, and it's like, it's really mellow, but very measured, and it has little bursts of like little bridge bit and then verse. His voice gets you instantly. It's weird because like this is what I was saying at the start. It's like this song is so stitched into my being because I've heard it so many times and had so many weird reactions to it. Like, again, speaking of the sort of tears things, like, it might be that, it might be sort of hyping me up for something, or like, so it covers so many bases. And it's almost like the effect has almost worn off now because I've listened to it like literally thousands of times. And it caught me from the first riff. And then at the end, it also ends in some like drums that I've sampled as well. So it's got it all. So I don't really know what to say about it. Yeah. I sort of don't have the words for it, but I just know...
The idea is people are going to hopefully go and explore it.
I like to think so, because it's like, I know that sometimes when people talk about songs that they really like it, without hearing it at the same time as them talking, like sometimes you get podcasts where like they'll talk about it and the song will fade in the background. But I prefer it, when I hear somebody talking about it and I was like, I really have to hear this, like... I don't know if I'm doing it justice at all, but it's just beautiful. Like it's got that melancholy element that I feel like my whole life has just been leading to this sort of point where I'm just into everything that's just a bit sad and like a bit sort of tearful and like that kind of wobbly, I don't know, bittersweet melancholy type thing. So in a way, it's kind of going back to what my dad was playing in the car, which is like Dire Straits. So it's a bit like Dire Straits for me now. So if I ain't got kids, but I imagine I'd be playing this in the car and then like the kid would be me back then. Later on in 40 years, talking about it on a podcast probably.
That's nice, man.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about it like that, actually. That was sort of off the cuff, I guess. But I think that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that it's my equivalent of Dire Straits.
Yeah.
It's debatable whether it's cool or not. I mean, it depends if you think Dire Straits are cool or not, but it's a song that I don't think many people will necessarily know.
Yeah.
It was never like massive or anything, but, it, I think if you listen to it, like, just stick with it for the first few riffs, like, or like the first few sort of repetitions of the loop, or whatever you call it, and just give it a minute or so, because it's just gorgeous, like, totally stunning. To me, perfect. And yeah, there's so many tracks that I could have picked, but this is I don't know. I could probably explain or like talk about other ones more coherently, but yeah, this I'd say just go with this and give me a shout. Let me know what you reckon.
Wonderful. So what are you up to at the moment? Producing away?
Yeah, a lot of podcasty stuff. So that seems to have taken the driver's seat at the moment. So yeah, producing Pips, Brett's, the Pod Bible one, and the Person First with
Ben,
your boy Ben, and so lots of that, and then my own one as well, which is called Buddies Buddies.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so that's basically set in Margate, which is where I make my home nowadays. So I would always, everyone's always talking about how, oh yeah, there's loads of stuff going on in Margate, and like loads of people doing this all sort of like really artistic, creative stuff. And when me and my girlfriend moved there like a couple of years ago, we sort of like underestimated how long it would take to make friends there. So we got there, and after a month we were like, how are we going to make any friends? I don't know anyone. And we knew like a couple of people, but it over, like, now I realize that you just have to sort of, it's just through familiarity and repetition, showing up places, and you know, you build up those relationships. They don't just happen like, oh, you're new here, what's your name, cool, do you want to have dinner? It's like,
yeah,
it takes a while. And that was an interesting lesson, because yeah, I'd sort of forgotten that it's like making adult friends. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the dynamic of whether you've got kids or not, and you know, this kind of stuff. So in sort of trying to get to a point where we could call people friends and sort of, you know, like make acquaintances and stuff, I thought, well, there's so much creative stuff going on here. Like I should be talking to these people and recording it. And like, and I'm so used to listening to podcasts now, I was like, I feel like I could do it. I'm just going to give it a shot. And it's, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if you get this, but like, was podcasting as easy or harder than you thought, or as easy as you thought it would be? Like, do you find it easy?
I do now.
Yeah.
And when I say easy, I'm comfortable doing it.
Yeah, I guess that's
like
what I mean.
Because what I like about it is there are no rules.
Yeah.
So you can't really get it wrong.
It's true. Yeah. It's what you make it,
and I like that. But the hardcore listening podcast was strange, because it just obviously was bred off the back of spoiling Pip's podcasts. So he made us do our own.
I've heard every minute of those.
And so, yeah, that was just easy, because that was just, let's get drunk. And that's evolved now, and that's, you know, that's become its own model. But this podcast, the first ever episode I've done, which for anyone that listens, I would, if you haven't listened to it, listen to the first episode, which is me and Scroob. And of all the guests I've had on, I've probably known him the longest and know him the best. And it's the most nervous I've ever been.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, I feel like when you know people really well, it changes. I think it just makes you realise, like, actually, maybe I don't sit in the same room as you and have a chat like this with you. Like, usually you're doing something else, or you have, like, a casual phone conversation or something. You don't often sit and have a really present, considered talk with people. So I think that's, like, I mean, that's what I was saying, is, like, it was a bit easier than I was thinking. Like, I realised that when you set a time to speak to somebody and you've done a bit of preparation, and you're in that mind state where, like, you're ready to sort of, right, an hour, I'm going to be focused, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to, like, I think just listening is the most important part, then it's not that difficult. But I think what I'm finding now is, like, there's an art to steering a conversation. And you know, at the moment I've got a few notes here, but like with the podcast, I'm finding it really difficult now, where it's like I've got a page of really tricky to read notes. So I'm not, I'm sort of like, yeah, listening to somebody talk, like, yeah. I'm looking at my notes, like,
I mean, you couldn't have written them notes any smaller if you'd tried. I mean, you're being very considerate of the, you know, of the trees, because you have got a lot of words on one piece of paper there, mate.
Very economical. Yeah, but I mean, it's, yeah, so like that's one thing I'm realizing.
But as you were saying, you was looking for an avenue to get to know people.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
But do you find... No, you haven't at all. It's a full circle, which has made me think that what I find through doing these podcasts is we've known each other, me and you, maybe 8-9 years.
Yeah.
But we've never sat and spoke...
No.
This is the longest that me and you've ever sat and spoke.
Yeah.
So I feel like I know a hell of a lot more about you now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know you was into hardcore and metal. I didn't know you had long hair. I didn't know. You know, I know. And so I do think that when you spend an hour doing a podcast with somebody, you do develop much more of a relationship with them than you would if you was just having a pint in a pub, having a quick chat, or having an hour chat around a table in a pub. I do find that a podcast kind of really does enable you to forge, you know, forge a bond with someone.
Yeah, but it's also, it's not a selfish way of, it's not like we're just getting to know each other. Oh, by the way, we're recording it. It's like, this is, I mean, I'm not going to talk about this one in particular, but like the other ones you've done, like they're entertaining. So they're, you listen to them and then hopefully you get something out of them. So it's not, you're not just listening to two people catching up and making all these references to stuff you don't know about. Like we're hopefully talking about stuff that somebody would be like, oh yeah, I remember that. And hopefully getting something out of it. And also the questions that you've got for this podcast, they're things that I think everyone wants to answer. It's like, I've got an answer for that. I'd say this, I'd say that. So you've got that element going for it too, where it's like, it brings people in because it really makes you think of what you'd be doing as well, like what you say.
What's your podcast called?
Oh, it's called Buddies Buddies.
See what you've done there.
Do you see what I did?
Yeah, it's clever.
It's all right, isn't it?
And so you go and speak to creative people in Margate?
Yeah, so in Margate there's, I don't know if it's a scene you'd call it, but basically there seems to be a concentration of like a lot of very bold, creative, artistic, just really interesting characters, and there's like a broad range of skills and expertise and crafts. So on my one, so I started off by talking to, there's a guy called Don Bridges who founded this company called Heckles, whichever way you, it's like H-A-E with the A and E joined together. They do it's sort of like sea-based therapies and skincare and fragrances and things like that, but with a real sort of ethical society, sociological link kind of thing. So it's all linked to Margate, but they're extending to London as well. But then in London they're going to be doing a similar thing where it's like linked to London too. So the first one was talking to him, which is interesting because in the year or like 9 months since we did it, like it's almost irrelevant now because so much has changed, which is another element of the podcast. It's like a snapshot of what's happening at that time. So it's going to change. Like in a year, maybe some of these people won't be doing that thing anymore, or they'll have changed it completely. But
it's a document then, isn't it?
Yeah,
I like that. Like,
yeah, I think so. Like it's and then, you know, then it's like one woman I spoke to who does like sound therapy with these, they're called singing bowls, so like they're glass crystal bowls and she like waves a wand around them, and then they like the whole sort of marriage of all these different tones works to just, it just knocks you out like in the best way. It's amazing. And it's just sort of like, yeah, like graphic designers, there's a baker I'm going to speak to, I mean, artists, musicians, there's this guy Ardem who I spoke to recently who's used to be in Fridge with Fortet and does his own solo stuff, and he did Avenue 5 recently, and there's tons of people. It's tricky because like I mean I could just speak to everyone on, there's a road called North Down Road, which is where there's just like tons of businesses up there. I could speak to everyone up there, but it's like there's so many different ways you could go. You could speak to shop owners, you could speak to artists, you could speak to musicians, but Yeah, I mean, I'm just seeing who I can sort of drum up to guest on it, and hopefully the themes won't be like that exclusive that people not from Margate won't want to listen to it.
Sure.
Hopefully it's like, yeah, they're in Margate, but the localness of it will sort of translate with bigger themes. So the story of how they got their thing started might relate to you in London or, you know, Canada or like
yeah
wherever you are. So I'm using it as an experiment to see like what will happen with a local podcast. Like will it translate to globally, to countrywide, like seeing what happens. And if not, then if it picks up in Margate, then that's awesome too.
Wonderful. Yeah. Where can people hear it, buddy?
So it's on it's sort of powered by Acast, so you can find it on acast.com, you can find it on Spotify and iTunes, and I think most podcast places, I know it's on Acast, Spotify and iTunes, Buddies, go to buddypiece.com, you can hear it on there.
And if they head over there, can they check out the music you've done?
Yeah, for that I'd say go to bandcamp.buddypiece.com. Or maybe it's buddypiece.bandcamp. I can't remember. But it's buddypiece bandcamp, basically. That's got like mixes and beats and yeah, all kinds of stuff. There's so much on there. I couldn't tell you where to start. I think just push play on a random album and see what happens.
Lovely. Buddy, thanks so much, mate.
Thank you, Stu. Thanks for listening, people. I hope you go and check the video for Dancing in the Street. I hope you look at the group Opus,
maybe Swerve Young Black Teenagers.
I'd say that's not really a recommendation.
Yeah,
you can just hear it and let it glance off you and carry on with your day.
Yeah,
nice one.
There you have it, Buddy Peace. We had a good chat. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did having that chat. Go and check out Buddy's Buddies, his podcast. And Willie said go and check it all out on the socials and give him a like, love and a share. And thanks ever so much for listening. Please, as I mentioned at the beginning, have a look in the back catalogue and see if there's any in there that tickle your fancy. Give us a listen. Just subscribe. Just subscribe. All right, I'll see you next week. Thanks ever so much for listening. Bye-bye now. Oh, yeah? Sorry, I've butted in yet again. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about, that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes, so if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. Podbiblemag.com. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.